I tell.
All right, we'll chat later. Good morning, everyone. I am going to call this meeting to order. This is the May 4th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. My name is Andy Kotkamp, and I've been appointed by the Chelan County Board of Commissioners to serve as a land use hearing examiner, and my job is to render decisions on various applications that are authorized to come before me, which include major subdivisions and administrative appeals. That's what we have on the agenda for today. I consider any testimony and evidence presented at today's hearing, as well as all the written materials that are already on file, in order to make my decision. Now, the hearing process has certain rules, but I try to conduct them in a relaxed and informal manner, but we still have a procedure we're going to use. Obviously, we'll take each item separately. For the first item, the major subdivision, staff will present their report to make whatever recommendations they wish to make, and then the applicant will be given an opportunity to present their testimony and evidence, and then the public will be given an opportunity to testify, and then if there's any testimony in opposition to the project, the applicant will be given an opportunity to present whatever rebuttal testimony they wish to make. Now, the last item on today's agenda is an administrative appeal. This is a matter that is between the county and the appellant, so there's no public testimony for this appeal. So we'll have an introduction by staff, and then the appellant will be given an opportunity to present their testimony, and then the county will be given a last opportunity, and then the appellant, who has the burden of proof, will be given the last opportunity to present the testimony and evidence in that appeal hearing. If you are going to testify, I'm going to have you state your name and address, and then I'm going to swear you in as a witness. I'd ask that you keep your testimony relevant to the application that we're talking about and not to other issues beyond the scope of the proposal. If you have anything in writing that you want to submit today, we can make those arrangements. I have the option following this hearing to keep the record open if I think there's a need for additional written testimony to be submitted. But in any event, my written decision will be made within 10 working days after I close the public record. There is exceptions provided by the Chelan County Code regarding requests to reopen hearings or requests for reconsideration. My decision on each of these matters will be final and conclusive unless they are appealed. Appeals are by means of what's called a land use petition action. They have to be filed within 21 days of the date of the issuance of the decision. And if the appeal is not timely filed, the appeal would be barred. The bottom line is that if you're considering an appeal of any of my decisions, you really should seek immediate legal advice. So I reviewed the items on today's agenda. I don't have any interest in the property or other proposals to be heard today, and I'll be able to fairly and objectively consider each item. And outside of receiving and reviewing the staff report, along with all the attachments to the staff report, which included all those application materials, all the appeal materials for the plat, there's site plans, there's comments, public and agency comments, noticing documents. And for the appeal, there's the materials from the appellant and the materials relied upon by the county. Other than receiving and reviewing all those items, I've not had any communication regarding either of the items that are on today's agenda. So with those representations, if there is anybody here today who objects to my participation as the hearing examiner, for any item, you need to unmute yourself and state so at this time. All right, hearing none, we'll turn to the items on today's agenda. One administrative matter. On AA22-175, this was number three on the agenda. If you came to watch this hearing, this appeal has been withdrawn by the appellant, so it is now stricken from the agenda. So I just wanted to make that clear at the beginning. Now we'll turn to the plat application that I talked about. This is application number P21-47. Zero, this is an application for a cluster subdivision, major subdivision, to be located on property located in Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. There's going to be a proposal of six lots with one dedicated open space lot. For the record, I'll admit into the record, not only the staff report, but all those application materials, all the noticing documents that have come through, all of the comments, both public and agency comments that have come through, there's SEPA documents that have come through, all of the various application materials, the site evaluation, the geotechnical report, all those expert witness reports, I'll admit all those items. Indeed, I will admit the entire planning staff file. into the record at this time by this reference and turn this matter over to Mr. White for the staff presentation.
Thank you, Andy. So plat 21-470 is an application to cluster subdivide parcels totaling 33.5 acres into six residential lots in the AC zoning district and RR20 zoning district, utilizing the cluster subdivision provision found in CCC 11, found in Chapter 12 of the County Code. So the lots will be approximately 0.67 acres in size and will exceed the minimum lot width of 150 feet at the building line. Access for this development will be an internal roadway off of North Dryden Road. Domestic water will be supplied by a proposed Group B water system. Sanitation will be provided through individual private septic systems. An open space tract will be developed consistent with Chelan County Code 12120504A. An open space management plan will be submitted with the final plat for recording. Staff issued a SEPA MD&S on March 16th, 2022, of which has not been appealed. So a couple of other edits and comments regarding this plat. So the subject properties have already been tested for lead, arsenic, and organol chlorine pesticides, and elevated levels of these contaminants were found. Therefore, the applicant must use the model remedies to remediate the subject property and bring it into compliance with MTCA standard cleanup levels. Just yesterday, we submitted a new public comment from James Stewart that was located, and this public comment had concerns about the land use and nearby wildlife. Per comment received from the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation, no blasting shall occur and the operation of heavy equipment shall be as far from the pinnacles as possible and be as restrained as feasible. Further development should also coordinate with the Washington State Parks and Rec Commission and WDFW to provide development protection measures such as the vegetative buffers and fencing along the common line properties, and then avoid stormwater trespassing on state land. So staff has reviewed the application materials, the agency comments for consistency with applicable codes and regulations, and this commission recommends approval of plat 21-470.
All right, the one clarification that I would like, and I'm sure Mr. Beardsley wants to make sure about this as well. In the Department of Ecology comments regarding the lead and arsenic pesticides, proposed condition of approval number 10, I'm not clear if it's requiring the applicant to do the cleanup, because it indicates that the Department of Ecology just recommends that the potential buyers be notified. So is this going to be a buyer requirement for the cleanup or the applicant's requirement?
This is an applicant's required cleanup.
All right. Thank you very much. Is the applicant ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Beardsley. For the record, can you state your name and an address?
Dan Beardsley, representing the applicant in this project. My address is 325 32nd Street Northwest, East Wenatchee.
All right. Could you raise your right hand for me, sir? Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right. Thank you. And you indicated that you're here as an agent authorized to appear and speak on behalf of the property owner and applicant today. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, sir, what would you like to tell me?
Okay, well, as Alex Just a few things, not a whole lot. T accurately represented the application, been working with Alex for several months on this, and finally get to a hearing here. So there's just a couple things. With respect to the lead arsenic remediation issue, he's right that we submitted the sampling data with the environmental checklist. It's included in the mitigations for in the MD&S, and we're fully prepared to comply with the Model Toxic Control Act. You asked the question about whose responsibility it is and the timing. The Model Toxic Control Act is very explicit in my mind, and we've dealt with this before, that the cleanup has to occur before occupancy. So I've talked with Jeff Neuschwander at Ecology, who's the project manager for this whole region, and we think we can develop a plan that will work. But it's because the part of the remediation is the capping, and that occurs when houses are built, the driveways, the roads, patios, all that, that provides capping. And so you don't go in and cap the whole thing and then dig it all up again. So I think the appropriate condition is just to deal with the Model Toxic Control Act. What do they call them? They're prescribed remedies anyway. And we're happy to do that. And so I don't think the county, I don't think it's appropriate for the county and you as the hearing examiner to say it has to be done by the applicant. I think it's more appropriate to be just consistent with their model cleanup provisions, and it'll work out a lot better, and it fits the MTCA requirements more appropriately, in my view. I think you see the issue. You don't want to go, like, for instance, cap the whole thing and then dig it all up again. That doesn't make any sense. So the applicant is happy to work with Ecology and do the appropriate remedial action.
Yeah, the I understand that, what you said about the capping part of it makes perfect sense. And the applicant will have to work with Department of Ecology on this. I think from members of the public's concern, it would probably be, well, what happens when we're digging the hole for the foundation and we're stirring up the dust and the wind is blowing? And where are all these particles going to? So that's also something that I'm sure Department of Ecology will have to pay close attention to as well.
Well, that's exactly right. And it's not, it's dust-borne particles aren't the issue. It's the ingestion by children is of the actual dirt. So once again, just, I think if you condition it on compliance with the MOTCA and the model cleanup remedies, they've thought about this a lot, and we're not going to get away with anything, that's for sure. So we know it has to be done. We're happy to do it.
So the language of proposed condition of approval number 10 and its subparts, is that language agreeable to the applicant?
Let me go through that just one more time real quick here. I was talking about condition 10.
So the actual 10,
the
10 already says, well, if there is contaminants, well, we already know that there are. So it's 10, 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, and 10.2 is really the germane language, I think. If sampling indicates elevated levels of lead and arsenic, which it does, cleanup would be required, and the Department of Ecology plans to use model remedies for lead and arsenic pesticide contamination, and that's just fine. We're happy to deal with that.
Okay.
Not happy to deal with it, but we deal with it.
Well, it's just a situation on the ground. Or anyway, okay, I wanted to make sure that was really clear. Okay, what else would you like to tell me, sir?
Yeah, I think the way it's written, Mr. Examiner, is just fine. Entirely up to you, of course. A couple other minor issues on page 11 of 19, where there's a suggested hearing examiner action. And I think we've run across this before, where it says suggest that you approve it to develop the facilities and improvements in strict accordance with the standards established by this. There's no resolution, but that's just a wording error. But you understand what I'm saying. The strict accordance, I would much prefer if you would say substantial conformance with the preliminary plan submitted. That way, these are preliminary, and we don't know that you might hit a fire engine sized rock or something and have to move the road around a little bit or do something, and might have to move the well to a different location if you get a dry hole. So I don't think it compromises the approval if you just say substantial conformance with the plans submitted, as submitted, or however you want to word that. Yeah, I think you understand what I'm saying.
Got it. Okay.
Things come along in the process of actually building the project. And if you say strict accordance, and sometimes you get somebody new in the planning office and they get all wrapped around the axle about that kind of language. So we'd appreciate it if you could just change something along those lines I suggested.
All right. Thank you very much.
And then the last thing I would mention is on page 14, condition 16.3.1. It says all buildings that require a building permit will comply with the WUI code as adopted by the state of Washington and Chelan County. My understanding is this project, or any project, is vested at the time of the complete application notice, and that was quite a long time ago. And when it says Chelan County, we want to be clear, Chelan County is right now in the process of adopting new WUI code. And so if you just added maybe a paragraph, a comma, and a statement that after Chelan County, as of the date of your decision or the complete application, whichever you prefer, they haven't adopted them yet, but it seems like I think that would be appropriate. They may have to require comply with the new ones anyway under the building permit standards, but that just seems like a more appropriate way to phrase that.
All right, I understand that. It's a vesting issue.
All right. Other than that, all looks good to us. We're happy with all the other conditions of approval and willing to proceed.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Beardsley. We'll turn this matter over to the public now. I'll just kind of go through the list of people that I have here. Ms. Barge, did you wish to provide any testimony today?
Yes, I do.
All right, I'll have you state your name and an address for me.
Amanda Barge, 303 South Mission Street, Suite 200, Wenatchee, Washington, 98801.
All right, could you raise your right hand for me? And do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
I do.
All right, thank you. And are you here on behalf of the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife?
I am.
All right, what would you like to tell me?
In addition to the comments we provided about just the development itself, you know, we recognize that the habitat value has been lost due to alternate land use since it's previously been an orchard. However, it is adjacent to Pinnacle State Park, which is also mule deer winter range and has undeveloped habitat on that property. There's a winter closure for that state park. So we just want to make sure that, you know, the homeowners in the future, I could see it be tempting to go out your back door and snowshoe around or let your dogs run around when the state park's closed because of the proximity. So we just want to make sure that that state park closure is honored and understood by future homeowners in the development, to respect that mule deer winter closure, and not cause adverse impacts to wintering mule deer. There's a few more things I want to add that I just emailed to Alex a few minutes ago that I realized I didn't include. These are best management practices for limiting human-wildlife conflict. Mule deer and other wildlife don't necessarily respect property boundaries. And so because they're mule deer in the area, there may be a human-wildlife conflict that comes up as a result. We have some best management practices we typically recommend to avoid that. These could be included as covenants or plat notes or, you know, a part of the condition of approval. I'll just list these out here. The first is landscaping with vegetation not palatable to mule deer. So, you know, just trying to minimize things that might become, you know, create an attractive nuisance where, you know, if you landscape with vegetation that is tasty for mule deer, they will come into your yard and they will eat it. And we typically get complaints from people about, you know, there's deer in my yard. We don't have the resources to respond to those types of complaints. So, you know, landscaping with vegetation not palatable is one way to avoid that. Next is controlling and preventing the spread of invasive and noxious weeds to the undeveloped shrub steppe and mule deer winter range habitat that's adjacent. So, you know, some sort of separation and management of, you know, the property for noxious weeds would help prevent degradation to the adjacent critical area. The next is shielding of lights to reduce the effects of glare and light trespass. That might be part of the building code, I'm not sure, but just, you know, trying to not create adverse effects from lighting from the future housing development. The next is signage cautioning drivers to watch for deer. So, you know, just trying to prevent collisions and injury to both people and wildlife as a result. Requirements to fence pets and leash dogs when outside home fences. So, you know, that goes back to kind of that original comment, you know, mule deer, especially in the winter, are already stressed. So being chased by, you know, dogs is something that could lead to injury or mortality in a time period where they're more sensitive. Covenants acknowledging the responsibility and cost of responding to human wildlife conflict are the responsibility of the homeowners. So just that goes back to, again, WDFW doesn't have the resources to respond to human wildlife conflict that might be a result of living in an area with mule deer. So I sent those to Alex. You know, I apologize for not including those originally. I'm happy to answer any questions about any of those recommendations.
No, I haven't seen them yet, so I'll have to take a look at them with everybody else.
Yep, so fair enough.
Thank you very much for coming in, Ms. Barge.
Yep, thanks for the opportunity.
Bye-bye. Andy, as regards to Amanda's comments, I actually did have most of those already in my staff report. They're under condition of approval number 21 there that have those conditions that she just talked about listed as conditions of approval.
Thank you, Alex. Appreciate that.
All right. Thank you very much. Next on the list is Mr. Christensen. Did you wish to provide testimony today?
You're muted.
You'll need to unmute yourself. There we go.
Yes, I would like to submit some today.
All right, I need to have you state your name and your address, and then I'm going to swear you in as a witness.
My name is Craig Christensen. My address is 7610 Sheba Road, Dryden.
All right. Do you swear or affirm under penalty of perjury that any testimony you give today will be the truth?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Mr. Christensen, I did receive and review your written comment. What else would you like to tell me?
I have a question initially for the hearings examiner and the community development. I'm asking, did you in fact receive and record my public comment that I issued?
I indicated, we did receive your, receive and review your public comment.
Okay, beautiful, thank you. So at this point, I would like to kind of step back and look at, I'm talking about what is commercial ag lands? So, and I want to make reference to within the zoning 11.60, the established zones. Number 11 is the commercial ag lands. And with the reason I'm making these comments is because I am a commercial farmer and I have been, and I think that it's important for community development and the hearings examiner to take closely into consideration my letter that I submitted, and I'm going to build upon that. So within the ag commercial lands, the purpose of ag commercial is to assure the long-term conservation of commercial agricultural lands to protect and preserve farmers' ability to farm, encourage existing future agriculture land uses. So let's just pull this in context. So within ag lands, we want to encourage the future agriculture land use. We do not want to encourage cluster developments. And so, this exact zone, the commercial ag land, the purpose, it's important for the hearings examiner and community development to look closely at number 11, read it and take it word for word what it is. And it's to protect agriculture land of long-term commercial significance, not already characterized by development from encroached and incompatible uses. I can attest that this land is in fact long-term commercial significance. We have been farming pear orchards within hundreds of yards of this particular location for years and years and years. And I think that it's very important to recognize what farming is, and I agree. Okay, so we take this into context. We want to preserve farming. And yet this individual Spears comes in and purchases this property from the Stewart family that has owned this land for over 70 years farming. I believe that if this property, it was viable, and yet an individual comes in and says, hey, I can capitalize off of this short term. I'm going to buy this, and per code, hey, I have the one time ability. It says 11 under the permitted accessory conditional uses in ag commercial lands, a one-time modification for cluster developments. That is 11.30. Yes, that is true. Okay, do we believe that this zoning was actually put in place and this 11.30 for a developer? No, I don't believe so. I believe that was put in place for people like the Stewart family who had been farming this for 70 years, and maybe they have some hardship or something, or maybe they have children, or maybe they have some family members that they want to embrace to have a cluster development, not a speculator who purchases something and says, hey, I can come in and capitalize in ag commercial lands on land that has been viably farmed in agriculture for over 70 years. And for me, this is a big, big deal that we are entering into in Chelan County, and it's going to go on and on and on. And it's important for Chelan County, for the hearings examiner, for the community development, for the entire county to recognize what ag commercial land is. And think about the farmer. Think about what is being done to for the farmer to help ensure that they can continue to operate and live. And I'm not making my comments against the procedure that has been put forth by, you know, I don't care if it's the Fish and Wildlife or somebody saying something else. I am simply saying that land, had it been known that it, okay, the applicant purchased the land and he wants to develop it. I can guarantee you that there are neighbors around that area that are farmers, and along North Road that are farmers and long-term farmers. Had they been given the opportunity to purchase that land, they would have purchased it and they would have farmed it. And the community development, I want you to know that the land that is being proposed for the cluster development, it had viable existing D'Angelo pear orchard trees on it, and they were removed. This individual, he purchased the property 3 years ago, or roughly 3 years ago. He had a plan. It was called development short-term capitalistic gain. That's not what commercial agriculture lands are intended for. Ag commercial lands are not intended for short-term gain by doing a cluster development by an individual who's a speculator. And I really want community development, the hearings examiner, and Chelan County to thoroughly think about what is commercial agricultural, viable commercial agricultural lands within Chelan County. Because I know for a fact on North Dryden Road, because we, Remley Orchards, is our business, has an orchard. We are currently farming it today, spraying. Maybe there'd be other farmers involved in today's conversation, giving public opinion. But no, they're busy farming, working. So my passion is about commercial ag lands, and I think the viability on this particular location, I believe it should be denied. And I do not believe that the community development or Chelan County takes into consideration zoning within the ag commercial lands, chapter 11.60, establishment of zones. And I don't think that they I don't believe that 11.30 under the permitted uses was intended for speculators who just recently purchased something. Those trees were torn down within 1 year of he signed a contract to purchase the land. He didn't have the statutory warranty deed until last year. So at this point, you know how I feel, and I think this should be denied in purpose because it does not fulfill, in my mind, the commercial ag lands purpose. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Christensen. I will look at this as you requested very, very carefully. However, I disagree with your premise that once the land is viable commercial ag land, the use can never be changed. It has to stay viable commercial ag land until it's for the rest of time. So I don't think the code should be read that way. I just I'll look at this again, but that's my, impression of the code is that, well, certainly the comp plan doesn't set forth zoning regulations. So I do look at the specific zoning regulations as to what applies. But if it is your position that once viable commercial ag land, the use should not ever be changed, I think I disagree with that.
I did not say that commercial ag land should never be changed. I said this particular instance, because I do not know about what is taking place in Manson. I do not know about other areas. I do not state, for the record, I'm not saying that once it's in ag commercial land, it should not change. I'm not saying that whatsoever. I am making specific reference to this particular instance and this particular instance only. Because under different scenarios, this is the problem. Perhaps this is another problem within Chelan County zoning. We cannot blanket stamp everything into, well, one size fits all. So I agree. I am not saying, so I'm not taking the stance you said that zoning cannot change. I want that to be on record. Thank you.
It is, and I appreciate you clarifying that for me. I'm glad I brought it up so we could further the discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Turning over to Person Who Cares. Did you want to provide testimony today? If you do, you need to unmute yourself. All right, we'll carry on to Samsung SMP610. Did you wish to provide testimony today? All right, hearing none. Stacy L., did you wish to provide any testimony on this today? All right, hearing none, then we will go back to staff. Is there anything further from staff?
Yeah, a couple quick comments regarding Mr. Christensen. So per the comp plan, Chelan County Comprehensive Plan, residential use is an allowed use within agricultural areas. Plus, this cluster subdivision is allowing for actually benefits agriculture in the county because the proponent is just clustering these six lots and then the rest will remain in perpetual open space, which I believe is developed or which is going to be agricultural use. So even though they are developing just a portion of it, the rest will be in agricultural use in the future, I believe. Mr. Beardsley might have more information on that. And then a couple other notices. So I was thinking about Mr. Beardsley's comments about having the contamination, dealt with primarily at the building permit level. Usually we do have, I don't know why I did not include this in the conditions of approval as a plat note to be placed on there, but I know previously prior to the MTCA requirements, we used to have a plat note saying that that there is elevated levels of soil contamination on the subject property and just notifying that the any future owners of the property that about the elevated levels of soil contamination on the property. And I'll have to dig out that that plat note that we do have, and I can send it to you, but I don't know if Mr. Beardsley would be amenable to having that placed on the plat. And then, as far as the rest of the historic or remediating the soil, as long as they are working with ecology on coming up with cleanup plan, I think that's what we're looking for as far as that note there. So when they come in for their red line, for their blue line review, like if they can provide documentation that they have worked with ecology on making a cleanup plan for the property, that usually satisfies it. But we don't like to condition that as a, you know, a building permit condition, just because a lot of times that's a miss in the future. And then, you know, the soil is not sufficiently cleaned up before, you know, people occupy the properties. So we prefer to try to deal with it at the platting stage as opposed to the building permit stage, just because things like these are sometimes missed on the subsequent building permits. And the WUI code, that will typically be dealt with at the building permit level as well, but I still would like to have the, I know they are working on the current code, but I'd still like to have the note on the plat as a recommended condition of approval. That's kind of the line that we got from the fire marshals as what they would like, just stating that, you know, and essentially it just says that, you know, it's something that would be handled at the building permit level, but just notifying future residents that, you know, this area is subject to the buoy code.
And would staff have any objection if language was, if this project is approved, would that language was added at the end of that proposed condition stating to the extent of in existence at the time of the determination of completeness or in existence at the time of vesting or something along those lines?
And are you talking for WUI or are you talking MTCA?
No, this is for the WUI.
I think that's fine. I might want to run it by the fire marshal just because it's something, this is their condition of approval, and I guess I can't speak for them necessarily.
Well, and also the overall, you know, law is that the project vests and has to comply with the rules and regulations in existence at vesting and not, which may come along later. So anyway, 16.3.1, if this is approved, I'll have to take a closer look at that language of that so that we're not imposing a non-vested requirement on the applicant.
Well, typically the vesting for the WUI would be under the building permit. That's where we would come into with the different conditions for, you know, that's where they would come in with like requirements for landscaping and like the building materials being used.
Okay, I see your position. All right, anything further from staff?
Nothing further at this point.
Thank you very much. Mr. Beardsley, anything further?
Just real quickly, with regard to the WDFW comments, those are fine. I think those are embodied in the conditions of approval anyway, so I don't have any particular issues with those. With regard to Mr. Christensen's comment, as staff has pointed out in their staff report, and as the notion that this property shouldn't be divided.
Ms. Norton, can you mute yourself for the time being?
Oh, sorry.
All right, go ahead,
Ms. Anyway, I often scold people all the time just because of what I do, that, you know, the train left the station on that issue a long time ago when the comprehensive plan was adopted and the zoning code was adopted, and I always encourage people to be a part of that process because, and then nobody does, and understandably, because it doesn't affect their daily lives until something happens next door, and that's when they get interested in it. So that's just a observation. This is clearly allowed by the code and the comp plan. I don't think there's any real argument about that. You may not like the code and you may not like the comp plan, but as I said, that train left the station a long time ago. And although it was easy to be sympathetic with what he says, nevertheless, that's not the way the code is written. Also, I want to point out that just for general information, Mr. Spears, the owner of this property, is a long-term Cashmere Dryden resident. He has a large pear farm operation up Brender Canyon. This is not new to him. He's been farming this land. The property that the orchard's been removed on is where the lots are. And that's the least productive. He was having a lot of trouble with getting decent production there. And so that's one of the reasons he chose that particular piece of the property to develop. And he intends to farm the rest of it as it has been farmed with pears. So just thought I wanted to point that out. I don't know that it makes any much difference in the approval process, but maybe it'll give Mr. Christensen a little solace. I'd probably not, but worth saying anyway. Other than that, unless you have some questions for me, I'm good.
All right, I do not have any questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Beardsley. For everyone that's here, I appreciate you coming for this matter. I am going to close the record on this matter now, and I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. If there is an additional plat note that staff wants to submit, I will leave the, actually what I'm going to do is I'll leave the record open until 5 p.m. today for that purpose. Mr. Beardsley, all you have to do is if they do submit an additional plat note, is you can request some time to comment on that and that will be granted. So you just need to let me know about that. But I remember Mr. White indicating that there may be an additional plat note that they'd like the hearing examiner to consider. So,
yeah, I expect the note's going to be their standard note that's always been used for the last few years, and that's perfectly fine. So, if in your judgment if it is consistent with that, I don't think we need any further input.
Yeah, when Mr. White sends it, he'll send you a copy, and if you don't have any objection to it, if you could just state that, then I can move on with trying to make a decision on this matter.
I'll do that.
All right, thank you very much. All right, that concludes that matter. We'll now turn to the second item on today's agenda. This is an application AA 22-128. This is an administrative appeal regarding the denial of a short-term rental permit regarding property located within Chelan County that is more specifically described in the staff report as well as in the application materials. Now, for the record, I will admit into the record that staff report, all those attachments to the staff report, which included all those application materials that had come through, there's a significant number of materials that were forwarded at the hearing examiner's request regarding some other specific documents. I'm not going to go through and identify all of those, but we do have the prior owner, some documents were submitted by the appellant regarding the prior owner's actions and settlements regarding this particular piece of property that related to the specific property. And then there's multiple documents that were submitted by the applicant with their STR application. Those will all be admitted into the record. The applicant at almost 11 o'clock last night, Ms. Norton, sent us a SEPA checklist and some STR location maps. Those will be admitted into the record. The staff report will be admitted into the record and all the documents relied upon by staff in making their decision to deny the STR permit application, and then all of the appeal documents from the appellant. All those items will be admitted into the record this time by this reference. We'll turn this matter over to Ms. Riles for the initial staff presentation.
Thank you. Excuse me. So the property that we're discussing is at 23336 Lake Wenatchee Highway in Lake Wenatchee, Washington. To refer back to the previous owners, They had operated illegally a lodging facility as well as held events and activities at the property without a conditional use permit. So they did sell the property, and H4IT Properties became the owner of record December 30th, 2021. And that new owner submitted an application for an existing non-conforming short-term rental permit on December 31st. When he submitted that application, he used the prior owner's proof of revenue and taxes paid to qualify for an existing non-conforming. Chelan County Code Section 1188-292EI and ID, a short-term rental use shall be considered lawfully established and existing and allowed to continue to operate as a legally non-conforming use only if the owner proves all of the following. And it lists down, and ID is where I'm going with that, and that the short-term rental operator has obtained and required the required land use permits within the time requirements in subsection 4. And the previous owners operated a lodging facility that was not legally established. Therefore, the current owner cannot qualify for the existing non-conforming status using their proof of tax revenue and taxes. March 21st, 2022, a letter was sent to the applicant notifying them of the denial of an existing non-conforming status, noting that the property had previous code violations which were received on or before August 25th, 2020. Thus rendering it unable to be considered to have been operating as a legally non-conforming per Chelan County Code 1188-2E. And any short-term rental property that has unresolved written notice of violation for short-term rental use received on or before that August 25th, 2020, or that operated as a short-term rental contrary to the August 25th, 2020 Chelan County Short-Term Rental Moratorium Resolution 2020-86, or subsequent rental moratorium resolutions 2020-104 and 2021-20, or upon permit application is found to have existing zoning, land use, or building permit violations, shall not be considered legally non-conforming use as follows. So one, there was a moratorium violation, short-term rental properties in violation of the moratorium resolutions of the subsection 2IE are not subject to a grace period for continued operation and must immediately cease all short-term rental uses, which the owners did eventually close down that unpermitted use, the previous owners. Two, unresolved written notices of violation or other violations, an existing short-term rental property found to have existing zoning, land use, or building violations must resolve those violations according to the time periods in subsection 4A2. And number three, under either case in subsection 2E2E1 or 2 of the section, the short-term rental property is subject to all provisions of Title 16, provided that the appeal provisions of 14.12 and Title 16 apply. On March 8th, an appeal request and applicable fees were received from Ben Kinney on behalf of H4IT Properties. Staff does recommend that the denial be upheld based on the applicant not qualifying for the status based on Chelan County Code 1188-290, and that one cannot prove existing legal operation with records that from an operation that was not legal.
All right, anything else from staff?
Not at this time.
All right, thank you. Is the appellate ready to proceed?
We are ready.
All right, Ms. Norton, can you state your name and an address for the record?
Julie Norton, Ogden Murphy Wallace, 1 5th Street, Suite 200, Wenatchee, Washington.
All right, thank you. Will you be providing testimony today or argument based upon what's on the record?
Argument based upon what's on the record.
All right, thank you. Please proceed.
Excuse me. Good morning. Just a reminder, Julie Norton on behalf of High Forit Properties. High Forit is seeking a non-conforming STR permit given its recognized history as a short-term rental or lodging facility. And pursuant to the settlement agreement that I understand is of the record that was executed by the county with the prior owner. based on the staff report, the county's denied the non-conforming STR on alleged uncured code violations. However, it's our understanding and position that the prior owner essentially cured those violations by entering into that settlement agreement. And in that case, there are no pending code violations. Or alternatively, this owner is entitled to take advantage of the cures that were provided for in that settlement agreement that resolved the code violations. The county has known that this is an STR based on the mapping prepared by their contractor, Burke. I did send over the county's maps with with our interlineations. I apologize for the late emails, but with young kids, busy family, that's sometimes the best time to get things done. And I wanted to make sure you had them before this morning. But what I provided was the Burke prepared maps from the county that were essentially prepared in March of 2020. I marked them up just briefly to identify the location of this particular property. This property appears to be identified on the map. So the county knew, and as early as March 2020, that this was operating as an STR, did not take any regulatory or enforcement action until after the moratorium was imposed. I think in part of going back to when this all started, I also submitted the SEPA report just as kind of a reflection on when the county started this exercise of regulating STRs. Page 3 of the SEPA says one of the goals is to allow a small increase annually in short-term rentals. And then in areas with high concentration, allow existing short-term rentals compliant with rules, but restrict new ones. So they knew in March 2020 that this was an existing STR. The county's intent in these regulations was not to, by its own terms, eliminate existing STRs, but was to really regulate new after the fact STRs. So fast forward to October 2020, the moratorium is placed in August of 2020. In October 2020, this property is identified as having a code violation for operating as an STR or lodging facility without a conditional use permit. And since these were identified after the moratorium, there was no way to cure at that time. And cure by meaning apply for the conditional use permit. So the parties entered into this settlement agreement with the moratorium still in effect. And now to cite the prior code violations as a denial, notwithstanding this settlement agreement, is seemingly inconsistent with the settlement agreement and sort of convenient for the county, given this all occurred during the moratorium when they knew about it before the moratorium, which would have given an opportunity to cure before the moratorium went into effect. The county claims that the prior owners were told that this could not be permitted as a non-conforming STR, but there's nothing in the agreement that says that at all.
What about paragraph 4?
Paragraph 4 that says that they must put to title that it just needs permits.
They shall provide notice to any potential purchasers that the property may not be used as a short-term rental, lodging facility, bed and breakfast, et cetera, without first obtaining required permits.
Correct. And I don't dispute that it says that, but I'm saying that these owners need an opportunity to actually make that language meaningful. This agreement was entered into at a time when nobody could obtain a permit. This agreement was effective by its terms in July 28th, 2021, when the moratorium was still in effect. So there was nothing. So our position basically is the code violations were resolved through entry into this agreement. And this is an attempt to give a meaning and effect to that agreement. The stated intention of the agreement is to resolve the code violations and cause the property to be in compliance so long as the agreement is followed. And we're attempting to follow that agreement. Recital E of the agreement states that the purpose is to quote unquote fully resolve the claims in the notice of violation, which was the notice issued in October of 2020, in which case it would prevent the county, to the extent they're claiming in part, they're kind of making two arguments here. They're claiming in part that it's prior code violations that are holding up this STR, when in fact this agreement resolves prior code violations. So there are no historic code violations because they've been in fact resolved by this agreement. Now, because of the moratorium, they can't get the permit that was needed to take advantage of the curative action. So the agreement stated that the property could not be operated as a lodging facility until it had the proper permits. But they couldn't get the proper permits per this agreement.
Well, this agreement, the prior property owners also admit, would you agree, that the property was in violation of the code? They admit a violation. It's not like a settlement that says, we don't admit we did anything wrong, but we're going to settle this case. That settlement agreement admits the property was in violation. The use of the property was in violation of the code.
I disagree with that. I think there's language in here that says that neither party is at fault.
Well,
they said
agreement number one, the Dragalios admit that their hosting of a wedding constituted a violation of the county code section, blah, 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 and agree to pay a fine.
Right. I agree that they admitted to that one. I do not agree that they've admitted to the use of the property as it relates to the conditional use permit. And I believe that can't be considered a pending code violation either, because they've cured it, A, through payment of the fee, and B, through entry into this agreement. So I'm speaking specifically to the conditional use permitting, which, or operating the short-term rental without a conditional use permit, as that seems to be what the county is claiming is the pending violation or the historic violation that causes this to be non-compliant. You know, bottom line is, if the owner is not allowed to obtain the non-conforming, or I should go back a little bit, you know, allowing the cure at this point, it's the cure being allowing this owner to finally give meaning to this agreement and obtain the permit, is consistent with the agreement and consistent with after the fact permitting that is allowed by section 1614.030 of the Sri Lankan County Code. This was originally enforced as a nuisance violation, and it under their county's nuisance code 1614.030, after the fact permitting is a viable cure mechanism. It's also consistent with this agreement. So our contention is that had we been allowed to permit when this agreement was effective, it would be considered an existing conforming potentially use on the property. Now, we understand the county could deny a permit, but at least it wouldn't be based on the type of use. It would be based on if other conditions were not met. And I'm not aware of any other conditions not being met. You know, the bottom line is if this owner is not allowed to obtain the non-conforming STR, then the county's agreement really wasn't in good faith. They knew or would have known at the time they entered into this agreement that getting the permit was impossible. And I think that belies Washington state laws, that there's an implied duty of good faith and fair dealing in every contract. And I can cite case law to it. For example, 180 Wynn 2D 102 Rector v. State Department of Health and Social Services. Specifically, there's a duty of good faith when the contract gives one of the parties discretionary authority to determine a contract term. In this case, the county controls the permitting process. So if the county states in section 3 that the property may not operate as an STR unless or until it has the proper permits, and the county holds the ability to do the permitting by now refusing them the ability to seek permits, even though that was an agreed term of settlement, and as condition for that settlement, the former owner dismissed their appeal of the code violations, it seems that this was a meaningless term.
Well, I don't want to get argumentative again, but I think the fact that this agreement was made during the period of the moratorium, we didn't know, nobody knew, none of the parties to that agreement knew what the final ordinance was, code provision on short-term rentals was going to say, whether this property would or would not qualify for a short-term rental permit. So I tend to disagree that the county was setting them up with this settlement agreement, because the county had not adopted any code regarding short-term rentals that would apply to this particular property. So, but I'll certainly review the case law you've cited that I wrote down, and we'll look at it more carefully.
I think by the time this agreement was entered into, they had a pretty good idea of where it was going. I mean, this was maybe now towards the end, where the last substantive changes to the code were really July of 2021. This is in August of 2021. And there weren't, by then there were several drafts of the code. So they would have known by that time where the code was going. So this again looks like another method of handpicking properties to make sure that they don't qualify. And so we're saying, why enter into agreement that contemplates future permitting and then turn around and say, you can't even apply for this particular permit? And again, going back to the county SEPA, this whole process wasn't about getting out existing rentals, which they had previously identified even before the moratorium as an existing rental, but never done anything with. So now they're again selectively choosing properties to exclude. You know, this property could also qualify under the new non-conforming STR provisions. Not only should they complete the cure under the agreement, but 1182-294A2 allows a grace period for certain curative measures to December 31st, 2020 or 2022. And that would include the timeline to obtain necessary permits. We're seeking this as a necessary permit. It's not only consistent with the agreement, but it's authorized by 1188-294A2. So with these measures, there is no, given the agreement, there is no pending code violation. It's been cured by this agreement. We believe this agreement allows for a good faith opportunity along with the county's code to obtain either an after the fact permit, so it would have never been perceived as unpermitted or unpermitted during the relevant time periods, or to at least to continue the existing, to be grandfathered as an existing non-conforming STR. And as far as I know, all other conditions to operate the property have been met. They've submitted all of the other documentation that would qualify them for this permit.
All right, thank you very much, Ms. Norton. Anything else from the applicant?
I have nothing, and I'm not expecting anyone to testify.
All right, we'll have staff's final comments, and then I'll return to you, Ms. Norton, for any rebuttal that you'd like to make. Anything further from staff?
Sorry. Yes, thank you. So in referring back, I think there's a little bit of confusion in terms. So first, I want to go back to the previous owners. When they originally built this structure, they were questioned if it was going to be used as a rental. They were very specific. It was just for family use. It was actually on the building permit that they were finally given for this 10-bedroom structure that it would not be used for rental purposes. Later, after they had used it for those purposes and used it for events as well, they could have applied for a CUP. However, for the structure that size and for a facility that size, it didn't meet the minimum lot size requirement. Moving forward, it's the same thing. As well as if you look at the code and the given tier levels, tier 3 is the highest you can go, which is a maximum occupancy of 16 people. which in a 10 bedroom house, you're looking at the classification would be two persons per bedroom, which would be 20, as well as that septic. So the lot size requirement's not there. And the previous owners were told this as well. So with 10 bedrooms, it also wouldn't be an STR. If anything over, 10 bedrooms is a lodging facility, not a short-term rental. And that minimum lot size requirement sticks for that as well. And they don't meet that.
All right, anything further from staff?
No, thank you.
All right, Ms. Norton, any final comments?
Yeah, just a few. So what I'm basically hearing the county saying now is that this could have never been allowed anyway. That's not what the staff report says. The staff report says that it was operating without a conditional use permit, suggesting that regardless of what it was or what lot size it was on, it had the ability to obtain a conditional use permit. What I'm hearing from them now is saying, which is not supported by anything in the record that's been shared with me, is that the property couldn't qualify to begin with. If that was the case, why didn't the initial code violation say you can't operate in this zone, period? It didn't say that. It says you need a conditional use permit, and we're going to record to title that you need a conditional use permit. So that's a whole different argument. The position that the enforcement action took and the staff report is that it would apply, it needed a conditional use permit. We don't dispute it didn't have the conditional use permit. We are disputing now that they should be given the opportunity to take after the fact curative action because there was no meaningful opportunity to complete the cure that was mutually negotiated and entered into. And if it comes with seeking additional variances on lot size, because this is, I don't think anyone disputes that this is a legal lot of record in the county, or whether there need to be limitations as conditions on numbers of bedrooms used, that certainly is something that could be done. But I have not, the argument they've made is not that this needs to be denied because it wasn't ever allowed in the zone. And then just going back, I did locate the language in section 13 of the agreement that it says that this agreement does not constitute an admission of fault or liability on either party.
So, and I just want to make, I believe this is in the record, but I just want to get the applicant's or appellant's position. Do you agree that your client's property, the building itself, does have 10 bedrooms in it?
I have not seen the property. It is my understanding that it has between 6 to 10 rooms that could be considered bedrooms. But that is based only on what I've been told in the record.
Yeah, I'll take a look at the record for that. I just, it's not part of what the staff has issued the denial on. But if there are 10 bedrooms, then that's a factor that the code does address. I am aware of that. So, but that's not part of the basis of the decision, or the denial decision, and I certainly agree with that, Ms. Norton. Is there anything further from the appellant?
That's everything I've got.
All right. Thank you very much. Then what I'm going to do is I will close the record. I've admitted all the materials that you have submitted, Ms. Norton, all your client's application materials, all the other documents I referenced early on in the hearing. So I will have a written decision made within the next 10 working days. There are no other items on today's agenda, so I'm now going to adjourn this May 4th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Hearing Examiner. Thank you all very, very much for coming today. This meeting is now adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.